Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi calls for the expansion of ties with Pakistan, saying the two sides have decided to increase their annual bilateral trade by $10 billion. Iran says last week's military operation against Israel was carried out to prevent further aggression by the regime and to restore peace and security to the West Asia region. And more tensions in the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces launch a raid into the northeastern city of Tubas as three Israelis are injured in an operation by Palestinians in Auschwitz. Well, welcome to our studios in the capital, Tehran. This is BNews. Thanks for joining us. Iran's president, who is visiting Pakistan, says the two sides decided to boost their volume of trade by $10 billion as a first step. Ebrahim Raisi made the remark during a joint presser with the Pakistani Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif in Islamabad. Raisi added that the two countries are determined to improve political, economic, and cultural relations. Sharif, for his part, reiterated the two countries' concern over the ongoing Israeli onslaught on Gaza. The premier said Islamabad will work with Tehran toward creation of a Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital. Prior to the press conference, Iran and Pakistan signed 8 memoranda of understanding for cooperation in different fields. Raisi is scheduled to meet with top Pakistani officials during his 2-day visit. He is expected to visit Sri Lanka after wrapping up his Pakistani visit. Former Pakistani diplomat Zamir Ahmad Awan was earlier with us to discuss the significance of the visit by the Iranian president to Pakistan.
We are neighbors, we are brothers, we are Muslim countries, and we have excellent traditional friendship between Iran and Pakistan. Definitely, both countries enjoy extremely warm friendship and very active cooperation. But with this visit, relationship will be strengthened further. In the public also, Iran has a very, very good reputation, and people of Pakistan also warmly welcome the president of Iran and his accompanying delegation. Definitely, Pakistan was looking forward for his visit, and there will be an opportunity to develop more trust, friendship, and strengthen the cooperation between two brotherly countries. There are some hindrances from some of the outside countries, and America is the leading that hindrances, but it is up to Iran and Pakistan that bilateral relation we should strengthen, and we should trust each other, and we should promote our close friendship and economic ties. There will be pressure from American, especially the sanctions. But it is still, I believe, that it is between Pakistan and the Iran.
Nasser Kazemi is our correspondent joining us from Islamabad to tell us more about this visit. Nasser, what do you have for us? What are we expecting from the visit of the Iranian president to Pakistan so far?
Kavi, on the one side, the government is, determined to strengthen the relation with the visiting Iranian president. And the meanwhile, the people of Pakistan are very enthusiastic, and they are sending the warm welcome messages to the visiting Iranian president, Mr. Raisi, through their social media platforms. So in Pakistan, there is vibes about Iranian president arrival here that he is warmly welcomed here because, in recent incidents which have taken place in recent past, especially when Iran strikes, retaliatory strikes on Israel was very hailed by the Pakistani people. Everyone was very happy. And now today the Iranian president is in Pakistan. People are welcoming him. And the meanwhile, both sides, we have seen the press conference of Mr. Raisi and the Prime Minister of Pakistan, Shahbaz Sharif, in which both leaders urged to carry forward these relations. Both leaders have also spoken about the ongoing situation in Gaza. The Iranian president clearly said that the ongoing genocide in Gaza is getting bad to worse day to day, and the international community should come forward to stop this genocide in Gaza. Meanwhile, both countries seem determined to carry forward those projects which are, inked between the two countries in recent past. And now we have seen that both Pakistan and Iran vowed to continue this mutual cooperation in the field of trade, in the field of energy, and in the people-to-people contact. So now, after this press conference, there is a schedule of President Raisi. He has to meet the President of Pakistan, Mr. Asif Ali Zardari, and later he will be meeting with the Chairman Senate, Yusuf Raza Gilani, who was the former Prime Minister of Pakistan, as well as he will be meeting with the Chief of National Assembly, the Speaker, Ayaz Sadiq. So, and the crucial meeting will be between the Chief of Army Staff, General Asim Munir, and the President Raisi. After this day-long schedule, he is scheduled to fly for Lahore, and he will be meeting with the Chief Minister of Pakistan's largest Punjab province, Maryam Nawaz, and the Governor of the Punjab province. And finally, he will be traveling to Karachi, where he will be meeting with the top officials of Pakistan People's Party, who is in power in Pakistan's largest Sindh province. So this three-day visit will be full of meetings and bilateral talks. Yes, Kaveh.
Thank you very much for that. Nasser Kazmi there from Islamabad. Thank you, Nasser. Iran says the response to Israel's attack on the country's embassy in Syria was a legitimate act of deterrence and in compliance with international law. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said in a weekly presser that the Operation True Promise was meant to prevent further Israeli acts of aggression and to restore peace and stability to the region. Nasser Kanani stressed that the Iranian attacks were successful despite more than 20 countries working together to repel them. The spokesman further slammed the U.S., the U.K., and France for blocking a Security Council statement that sought to condemn the Israeli strike. He denounced Israeli attacks across the region, including in Syria and in Iraq, saying such strikes violate the sovereignty of UN member states. Palestinians continue to endure a U.S.-Israeli genocidal war in the besieged Gaza Strip, the scene of death and destruction on a daily basis. At least three Palestinians were killed in an Israeli strike in the city of Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Israeli warplanes also targeted two residential buildings in the southern Rafah city, killing 19 Palestinians, including 14 children. The Ministry of Health in Gaza reports that some 54 Palestinians were killed and 104 others injured in Gaza in the past 24 hours. That brings up the total number of victims since October 7 to 34,151. The number of those wounded has also risen to almost 77,000. On Saturday, the Palestinian Civil Defense said bodies of over 200 Palestinians buried by Israel in a mass grave were recovered inside a Nasser hospital in Khan Yunis. We earlier talked to our Gaza correspondent Mutia Bamsaba to get the latest updates regarding Israeli attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip. Here's what he had to say.
The last night was horrific for the Palestinian people across all areas of Gaza Strip, whereas the Israeli occupation forces persisted and continued their airstrikes against all areas of Gaza Strip. And let me begin with the latest attack that targeted a group of the Palestinian civilians here in Deir al-Balah city in the popular market in the central area of Deir al-Balah city. The Israeli warplanes targeted a group of the Palestinian civilians. Multiple and dozens of the Palestinian casualties were left behind that attack. Over the last night as well, the Israeli warplanes carried out an airstrike against a residential building in Al-Prouk neighborhood in Deir al-Balah, in the southern part of Deir al-Balah city. The entire residential building was completely destroyed over those attacks. And here, in addition to that, in the central area of Gaza Strip, basically in an Nusayrat refugee camp, the Israeli warplanes also continued and intensified their airstrikes against the northern part of an Nusayrat refugee camp. Several Israeli airstrikes hit that area. In addition to that, the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained against those areas, including Al-Mughraga neighborhood, Al-Zahra town, and Gaza village area. In addition to that, multiple Israeli shells actually targeted the upper floor of the Al-Awda hospital in Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. The entire solar panels there were completely destroyed and devastated over that attack.
The Chief of Intelligence Directorate of the Israeli military has resigned over failures leading to the October 7 unprecedented Hamas anti-regime operation. Major General Aharon Haliva is the first high-ranking Israeli official to step down for failing to prevent the attack. In his resignation, Haliva said the intel division under his command did not live up to the task that they were entrusted with. The Israeli general demanded what he called thorough investigation into factors and circumstances that led to the attack. The resignation comes at a time when there are deep divisions among high-ranking Israeli officials over the failure of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to handle the Hamas operation. Israel has also witnessed mass protests for the past 6 months, with demonstrators blaming Netanyahu for his handling of the war on Gaza. Israeli forces carry out yet another raid in the occupied West Bank amid simmering tensions in the region. The regime's military targeted the northeastern city of Tubas in the raid. During the incursion, explosions could be heard across the city. Israel has stepped up its raids across the West Bank since the regime began its onslaught on Gaza on October 7. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance fighters have carried out an anti-Israeli operation in Al-Quds. According to initial reports, three Israelis were wounded in the suspected car ramming attack. Palestinians say that such moves are in response to decades of Israeli atrocities. The regime has killed at least 482 Palestinians since October 7. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, earlier told us about the fresh Israeli incursions into cities across the occupied West Bank and Palestinians who are fighting back.
The Israeli military claims that a Palestinian arrived at one of the, bus stations inside Al-Quds, and he rammed his vehicle into Israelis there in two different incidents, and that two Israelis had been wounded and transferred to hospitals inside Al-Quds. The Israeli military is claiming that this attacker, as they are saying, succeeded to flee the scene and left the area last night, and after the late hours of the night, Israeli settlers raided the village of Burqa near Ramallah. They set ablaze a number of Palestinian vehicles. They tried to burn a Palestinian home, and at the same time, the Israeli settlers set fire to a sheep barn, and they slaughtered a number of goats and sheep, according to the residents of Burqa. And at the same time, the Israeli forces raided the village of Burqa in order to provide cover for the Israeli settlers. The Israeli forces, meanwhile, stormed several areas across the occupied West Bank. They raided Qalqilia, Tobas, Maythaloun, South Jenin, and northern the occupied West Bank. In Balata refugee camp, East Nablus, exchange of fire have taken place between the Palestinian fighters and the Israeli forces. And the Israeli troops stormed Douma village south in Nablus and arrested a number of Palestinians there.
Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says it has shot down an Israeli drone over an area in the southern part of the country. Hezbollah said the targeted drone is Hermes 450, adding that the operation was carried out in support of Palestinians in Gaza. The group has downed and intercepted several Israeli drones in recent months. Lebanese resistance movement and the Israeli military have been trading fire since October the 8th, one day after the regime launched its genocidal war in Gaza. Hezbollah fires missiles and rockets at Israeli military sites in northern occupied territories, while Israel targets residential areas in southern Lebanon. People in different parts of the world continue to turn out in large numbers to protest against the ongoing Israeli genocidal war on Gaza. The Canadian city of Toronto, people have once again hit the streets to demand the government end its support for the Israeli regime. Earlier, our correspondent Camilla Escalante, who was present at the rally, joined us with the details.
Well, I'm in downtown Toronto, and once again, like every weekend, hundreds of people, if not thousands, are coming out here today to protest against the genocidal Zionist regime holding of hostages, of prisoners, for, of course, we know, many decades. That's the theme of this weekend's march. There are people here who have gathered alongside different organizations affiliated actually with their neighborhoods, because within the last 6 months, these organizations have kind of spurred up and began organizing locally against the genocide, and in order to approach their ministers of parliament and to try to tell them that it's simply not acceptable that they not call for a ceasefire. And now the demand has become a total two-way comprehensive arms embargo between Canada and Israel. They said some of the things that the Canadian government has done thus far have been only symbolic. A lot of expressions from the Canadian government of concerns with what's going on with Gaza, but not anything substantive in terms of actually trying to end the genocide in Gaza and Canada's complicity. It's also really important to say, one thing that we've been reporting for several months is that there is a significant amount of material that has been gathered by the International Center for Justice for Palestinians, a group of lawyers, academics, and experts, about the possibility of a case against Canada at the ICJ, in the same way that Nicaragua has taken Germany, the German government, to the International Court of Justice. Lawyers here in Canada say that they also want to take the Canadian state to the ICJ for its crimes, saying they have even more of a case than the case that exists against Germany.
France is being accused of increased repression towards their Muslim community since the start of Israel's genocide in Gaza. A protest against Islamophobia was initially banned, but thousands turned out despite the attempt at judicial intimidation. Ramin Mazari has more from Paris.
Dozens of organizations marched in Paris against Islamophobia and racism as Israel's attempted genocide and ethnic cleansing has caused increased state-sponsored repression against Europe's largest Muslim community. A main theme of the march was protecting children. Since October 7th, children as young as 10 years old have been charged with so-called apology for terrorism, while a child of 8 was falsely targeted for praying during recess. Scandals like those have many saying that non-white children are no longer being treated like children, but instead like suspected fanatics, delinquents, and full-grown adults.
We Muslims are enduring so much Islamophobia these days, and it's not like there wasn't a lot of Islamophobia in France already. The targeting of our children is a step too far, and it's incredible that they have taken this shameful step.
As France is accused of targeting Muslim children at home, their elite are giving military and political cover to Israel's mass murder in Gaza of an estimated 15,000 children and the orphaning of some 20,000 others.
On les bombarde.
It's totally unjust how we are watching murder, torture, and the bombing of embassies, and nobody is allowed to say anything. We're here to say, stop the violence against Palestinian and Iranian people.
A decade ago, during another Israeli invasion of Gaza, France became the first country to ever ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations. They banned pro-Palestinian demonstrations for a month after the counterattack by Hamas on October 7th, handing out hundreds of thousands of euros in fines and making mass arrests. Police initially banned this march, claiming it was a threat to public order and possibly anti-Semitic. That was overturned at the last moment, but many say the effort is proof of a long-running double standard against non-whites and non-Jews.
C'est des antisémites. Ça, c'est n'importe quoi.
Anytime there is a march about Palestine or Islamophobia, the interior minister in whatever administration seeks to ban it. The idea that we are anti-Semitic is total nonsense. I get the feeling that I'm more French than many others who aren't of Algerian descent, as I am, because many have totally abandoned the longtime values of French political culture.
Similar to during France's two-year state of emergency starting in November 2015, many have been shocked by the lack of outcry at this latest targeting of the Muslim community, despite perpetual bragging of being the alleged birthplace of human rights. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
And that does it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
The fact that McDonald's had to buy back all of its franchises from the Israeli regime was proof that the boycott campaign was working. Now, other major brands are worried this campaign will further damage their brand and their profits. Countries in West Asia are the frontrunners in leading the boycott campaign. Hi, I'm Kaveh Tapley. Welcome to Economic Divide. Coming up in this program, McDonald's buyback. 225 Israeli restaurants. Why? Well, they were battered by boycotts. Along with that came dwindling profits based on the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war. Some major brands are also one of the highlights of the program. When you take a look at those brands, Starbucks, Pizza Hut are some examples that have led to store closures and, of course, a drop in brand loyalty, average median to be about 14%. Then the part of the world that these boycotts are gaining momentum and are actually more than the rest of the world is in West Asia, countries like Jordan and Egypt. Arab governments actually can do more. For example, why not oil boycotts?
The boycott campaign against McDonald's is one prime example of how a boycott can work. In Q4 2023, the fast food brand missed its sales targets for the first time in 4 years, recording growth of 0.7%, well below 5.5% expectations in West Asia, China, and in India. Shares fell 4% on the announcement. And things took a turn for the worse for McDonald's in occupied Palestine. It announced that it would buy back all of its 225 Israeli restaurants after sales suffered from a boycott of the brand over its support for Israel. Alon Yal, which is led and owned by Chief Executive Omri Padan, had operated McDonald's restaurants in Israel for more than 30 years.
Time now to take a look at some of the social media posts. First up, McDonald's has been hit so hard by the international boycotts that they have had to buy out all 225 McDonald's franchises in Israel. Next, who says boycotts don't work? McDonald's lost $7 billion in boycotts over Israeli support. That's according to the CFO, Ian Borden. Then, keep boycotting. Starbucks has lost $12 billion from boycotts worldwide due to its support for Israel. This one says we should boycott taxes. It is our money. Saves us from wars that we pay for and BlackRock, Zionists, cabal banks fund from both sides. Then we should boycott their money system based on greed that they control. Next, you cannot get a state contract in 37 states in America unless you pledge allegiance to Israel first. And finally, your purchase of Israeli and American products or the products of companies that support Israel is funding the crimes of occupation around the world. Those were some of the posts that we thought were interesting. Let's introduce our guests for the first segment of our Q&A. Joining us is Angie Wong from the Daily Morning Show. She's host of The Final Countdown, political commentator on Fox News, Epoch TV, NTD, political contributor for The New York Post, and other U.S. publications. Angie Wong, welcome to Economic Divide.
Thank you for having me on your show.
All right, the first question that I have for you, when you take a look at what's just happened, McDonald's buying back 225 restaurants from Israel. I mean, these are consumers that have boycotted in Muslim-majority countries and Arab countries, which shows the effectiveness of their boycott. Does this mean that the boycott campaign is actually working when it comes down to the genocidal war happening in the Gaza Strip?
Yeah, no, the McDonald's boycott in Israel is certainly showing to be very effective. The McDonald's there supported the Israeli troops by giving them free meals, which is what sparked the initial boycott a few weeks ago. And since then, the entire franchise in Israel for McDonald's has lost so much money that the parent company based out of Chicago has had to buy back its franchises. They cannot show a loss for any McDonald's around the world. So this was their only move, which is to buy it back to take it out of the control of the franchisees. And we're going to start seeing other companies go the same way. Already we have another boycott for Starbucks. We're hearing that Burger King, another big fast food American brand, is also considering the same thing that McDonald's has done.
Very well. Let's introduce our next guest. We have Klein Preston, international attorney, joining us, chairman of the Governing Committee for Independent Foreign Observers. Klein Preston, welcome to Economic Divide.
It's my pleasure.
My question to you here are the boycotts that are happening in countries like Jordan, Oman, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey, and the UAE. Basically, these are countries that actually are distancing themselves from Israel. These are regional countries in West Asia. If they have gone that far, why don't they just cut the trade relations during this genocidal war? Some obviously are have a lot of oil. They could stop their oil deliveries to Israel.
That's a good question. I think it's an issue of escalation. During this entire crisis, Turkey, my understanding is, has not cut off gas sales to Israel. And so I think it's more complex than just putting economic sanctions and restricting the sale of necessary commodities such as oil and gas to Israel for a number of reasons that I think only Erdogan and maybe some of the other leaders in that area could answer at this point and calculate what the damage is or would be. I think that it will escalate if this IDF does not leave the Gaza Strip. It will have to, actually. But at this time, it's hard to say why Erdogan, some of the other leaders in the Middle East, would not have implemented more stringent sanctions.
Time now for the infamous section of the program. First up, we're going to take a look at where France is buying its gas from, and it turns out that it has ramped up its imports of Russian gas. Purchases actually have surged by 75% for the year 2024. The EU, it tried to reduce its energy dependence on Russia. Russian gas supplies had previously made up nearly half of all the bloc's gas imports. Well, it just goes to show you that EU countries cannot follow that and are thirsty for Russian gas. Next entry points to a US.com style crash where it seems like the US is set for one. Stocks reportedly could be in for a decade of next to nothing returns. Stocks appear to be in the midst of what's called a speculative bubble, which could set investors up for a dead ball era of performance. Next, taking a look at the Chinese currency, the yuan, officially it has overtaken the US dollar. Alongside the BRICS de-dollarization plans, the Chinese yuan has officially overtaken the U.S. dollar as the top traded currency, in this case in Russia. Well, the yuan has actually also overtaken the dollar to become the most used currency in China's cross-border transactions. So you can see how the yuan is obviously giving the dollar a run for its money. Next, something that the U.S. has been doing for quite some time, targeting China. The U.S. President Joe Biden, in this case, has blacklisted more Chinese firms than the former U.S. President Donald Trump. The U.S. president has targeted 319 companies and citizens from the Asian nation more than any other administration. Biden not only left in place tariffs imposed by his predecessor, but also increased the pressure, focusing on restrictions that block access to innovation, including those in the artificial intelligence sector. Those were the items that we picked for our InfoNews section.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The boycott campaign against McDonald's has been effective, but it's not just brand names that are taking a hit due to their association with the Israeli regime. There are other less known names and even types of boycotts that don't make it to the news. For example, the International Alliance of App-Based Transport Workers, IWATW. Probably never heard of it before. Well, what has become of them is they are comprised of 100,000 members that are spread out in 20 countries. Well, it has boycotted branded gas stations, and that's where it's been effective. Since the year 2020, Chevron is the brand name that it has boycotted when it comes to gasoline. Because Chevron has been extracting fossil gas claimed by Israel in the Eastern Mediterranean, and it has generated billions of dollars for the Israeli regime. So that's one of the things that you have not heard of when it comes to an organization such as that one. Another company that's been targeted and has worked when it comes to boycotts, it's Intel. It goes by INTC. Why? Well, Israel has reaped the rewards of association with Intel because it has invested $25 billion in occupied Palestine. It made that decision in December. That's in the middle of the U.S.-Israel genocidal war. Despite all the killings and carnage, it made that decision to do it at that time, which basically means that it's aiding and abetting Israel's apartheid for now decades due to the association that goes back that long. So that's another example that we don't hear much of. Next up, the boycott of Israel academia. That's something that is not highlighted in the news that often. And the reason is pretty obvious, as stated in their slogan, which says, you're committing genocide. Some of the examples that this is happening and the results of it, invitations to conferences, as you see there, a freeze on hiring Israelis at overseas institutions, rejection of scientific articles on political grounds, and also the disruption of lectures. And finally, a country that has taken a stance when it comes to boycotts has been Turkey. And it finally made a decision to do that after all this time. And basically, the exports is where it has impacted Israel. And that involves 54 categories. A couple of the items are steel and bricks. And that obviously has impacted the Israeli regime quite a bit because 70% of Israeli imports actually come from Turkey. And the construction sector in Israel, which was impacted due to lack of workers, is now going to take a major hit because of the way that the Turkish government has decided to boycott the Israeli regime when it comes to this sector in particular and its products. All right, let's bring back our guests and see what they think about all this and more. Rejoining us, we have Angie Wong, Daily Morning News Show and host of The Final Countdown, amongst the other positions that she has had. Angie Wong, welcome back. We're taking a look at boycotts against other brands aside from McDonald's in countries like Jordan, Oman, and Saudi Arabia. These are regional countries. Why do you think they haven't gone and boycotted things like one of their commodities, like oil, when it comes to the Israeli regime?
Well,
For consumers, it's a lot easier to protest with their wallets. And there's now being an effort to organize multiple multinational brands to be boycotted that support Israel. I was just looking at a list right now. HP, for example, Hewlett Packard, that's being also boycotted. And there are several American brands that are visible. And there are many, many websites now coming online to boycott any sort of corporate support that supports Israel. So I think that's where it begins, because it's a lot harder to get governments and government officials to start, you know, doing the big stuff, cutting off funding to Israel, for example. So, but, you know, for I guess, protesters and people who don't align with Israel, the most easy thing to do is to do a boycott with consumer goods.
Okay, what about the fact that you have politicians that need to play a part in this? Are they hearing the voices of the protesters when it comes to boycotting Israeli branded products?
Politicians are hearing this. They are seeing visibly how much the Israeli narrative has changed since October 7th, where they once had support, the support has been waning. And this, I've never seen anything so sizable of a shift before October 7th. Now I'm really starting to see, even here in the U.S., how much of the country is not for Israel. And how can anyone be? We're seeing the images of just horror coming out of Gaza. It's very difficult to support this ongoing. I do wish that Israel would support a ceasefire of some sort, because the governments, I think they're saying one thing. They're saying ceasefire. We want ceasefire, but they're also saying to Israel, go, 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 go. And I think that's where the consumers are saying, we know better. You can't tell us one thing and do something else. So now they've taken to the resort of banning and boycotting certain brands that support Israel.
All right, very well. Let's bring in our next guest, Klein Preston, who rejoins us, international attorney and chairman of the Governing Committee for Independent Foreign Observers. Klein Preston, welcome back to Economic Divide. We are taking a look at the McDonald's boycott initiative, which has sparked actually further boycotts of major brands like Starbucks, which has hurt, obviously, its bottom line. Do you think these boycott campaigns on these brand names, especially, are affected enough to impact Israel's economy?
Sadly, I believe no, because Israel has such a strong lobbying presence in the United States that they will persevere to meet the goals that they have set forth, which are genocide. There's no question that that's the mantra that both Jewish Americans and I think the majority of Jews in Israel are ascribing to and supporting. And I think that just a couple of companies that are being boycotted, that even though they may have American ownership, at least as far as the franchisor is concerned, it's not going to have an effect. They will do whatever they have to do to continue to kill people in Gaza and commit genocide, essentially. And the American money that's going to support them through the American Jewish community is going to stand fast with the IDF and the Netanyahu government, even as distasteful as that is to many people, both in Israel and the United States, including some of the people in our Congress who've spoken out against Mr. Netanyahu. But I don't think it's going to have that great of an effect because of the American money supporting the actions that are occurring in Israel now.
All right, Andrew Wong, I'd like to get your thoughts on this because we are looking at what should be the goal, and that is for the Israeli economy to be impacted by this. Do you think that it is through the boycott campaigns of different things and brand names, for example?
You're asking whether or not the boycott of these larger brands will affect the economy of Israel. I don't know the economic numbers for something like a Starbucks or a McDonald's, but you better believe if the parent company is pulling the franchisee's license from the Israeli licensee holders, they are definitely getting hit by the bottom line and their profits. And McDonald's cannot show that there's any losses, right? Because it's bad for the worldwide franchise. So it is effective in that sense, but also to protect the brand, because clearly McDonald's, the parent company here in the U.S., saw that the local franchisees in Israel, well, they were getting political with their brand. And that is what corporations stay away from. They don't want to be political. In fact, they probably have policies for franchisees to not engage in politics because it hurts their overall worldwide brand. So I can see McDonald's and Starbucks and Burger King, KFC, all the way down the line, pulling their brand if the franchisee becomes political. And in this instance, by giving free meals to the Israeli soldiers, that turned McDonald's into something that is not a you know, a Switzerland of brands where they stay out of wars and conflicts, but it is clearly in support of the soldiers. Whether you agree with that or not, that is probably going against their franchisee's licensing agreement.
McDonald's has blamed the boycott campaign on misinformation about its brand. It all started when McDonald's, a franchise in Israel run by Alonia Limited, said it would provide free meals to Israeli regime forces as well as hospitals. That said, there was also another motive for McDonald's to be targeted. Over the years, the stores with their highly recognizable golden arches have been repeatedly targeted as symbols of the United States, especially in West Asia. As such, the U.S. is known to not only conduct wars, but also to be a staunch supporter of the Israeli regime. Examples are the Second Palestinian Intifada, the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, and the Arab Spring protests, especially in Cairo, Egypt. Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. Mahdi Abbasian is on assignment. The boycott campaign against Israel is in full swing. Although McDonald's has suffered, other major brands are also taking a hit. Let's take the case of Coca-Cola, but from the angle of why it needs to be targeted. Well, Coca-Cola operates in a settlement in occupied Palestine that's called Atarat, an illegal Israeli settlement located in the occupied West Bank. For the settlement of Atarat to be built, Palestinian homes were demolished, and the original residents were banned from returning despite residing there for generations. By having an Israeli franchise in the illegal Israeli settlement of Atarat, Coca-Cola is ignoring international law and is profiting from the illegal occupation. Atarat is one of 250 illegal settlements. Therefore, selling Coca-Cola helps sustain Israel's illegal occupation of Palestine, as it allows Coca-Cola to profit from the land stolen from Palestinians. Now, in the West Asia region, sensitivities to Israeli-linked products are at an all-time high. Consumers in this part of the world are making a concerted effort not to purchase products that lead to Israel profiting from its genocidal war. Billboards, for example, in Kuwait have pictures of children covered in blood, accompanied by the shocking "Did you kill a Palestinian today?" alongside the hashtag boycotters. In Qatar, some Western companies were forced to close after their management published pro-Israel content on social media. The branches of the American cafe Pura Vida Miami and the French pastry shop Maître Choux closed their doors in Doha. There are some unexpected positive outcomes resulting from the U.S.-Israeli genocidal aggression against Palestinians, like a case in Egypt. The Egyptian carbonated drinks company Spiro Spathis, which was not very popular before the aggression, has now become extremely popular as an alternative to Pepsi and Coca-Cola after calls to boycott both. The
The company, which was founded back in the year 1920, published a statement on its Facebook page as an example, stating that it had received more than 15,000 CVs when it announced that it was hiring extra staff in order to expand its activities, given the higher demand for its products. This is just one of many examples of how local products are now the choice instead of the major brands. That does it for this quick take section. Hope you liked it. The success of the boycott campaign has been catapulted into another level ever since the Operation Al-Aqsa flood. There's no denying in that. Well, the longer the war drags on, the more effective and widespread the campaign will be. But what this campaign has done is to also turn the focus on domestic production in the respective countries, who are obviously Palestine-friendly, and of course, it has highlighted the plight of the Palestinians. That does it for this edition of the program. Thank you so much for being with us. Hope you enjoyed it. From the Kavit Ahli and the team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints. It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن
by means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن.
Muslims major problem is losing touch with the Quran.
کتاب الله.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam
is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
انما المؤمنون فقط مؤمن واقعی کسانی است که آمنوا بالله و رسوله.
In the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Hujurat, Ayah 15, we read, "The faithful are only those who have attained faith in Allah and His Apostle." This means that the real mu'min is the one who believes in Allah and His Apostle and the successors of Prophet Muhammad on earth. The concept of faith or iman has degrees. For instance, there are some people who wear only black for commemorating the event of Karbala. Still, there are some people who attend the majalis of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. There are still some others who donate in memory of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. So their faith in Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam has different degrees.
بعضی ها همین مقدار مسلمان که بچهشون زدن حسین اسم بچهشون زدن حسین.
However, there are some people who only name their children as Hussein, but nothing in their lives is like a Muslim. They neither establish Salat or pay Zakat or fast during the holy month of Ramadan. In better words, they have the lowest degree of faith. Faith, as in the famous hadith we read, has 10 levels. In a hadith we read, "If you want to test your faith, you must see in what occasions you are ready to tell lies. Some people are ready to lose their faith for an ice cream, some for a car, some for a house, and some for money." This shows the different degrees of iman or faith and how easy some people might lose their faith as a Muslim. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.